B-Pod Studios.
Thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain and inform you in the afternoon. Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hour number three of the program. We'll get back to your phones in a second. Spent a lot of time on last night's Monday Night Football game, which was fascinating. I loved. Very dramatic game. A lot of stuff to do a sink of teeth into, so we'll get back to it. But on the Patriots, it was heading into the second half, essentially. Biggest issue facing the team, as if I asked you that, what would be your answer?
I mean, to me, it's still the offensive line, and I don't think we're going to get an answer on it in the short term because Isaiah Wynn can't play until the Dallas game. So, you know, we'll get a better understanding of what they might do to mitigate the problem against Philadelphia. But the fact is that if that doesn't change, if they don't get some stability there, because again, you tell me, but I think they are below average, and they have to get to at least average. Okay, so now how far below average, we can debate that. If you go by the, you know, rushing yards per attempt, they're well below. So to me, major problem, because the deeper you get into the postseason, the more likely you are to encounter teams that are going to be good on defense. They're more balanced, particularly in the red zone. They're going to give you fits. And so the Patriots got to get that figured out, or it's going to undermine them. I do believe that. Like that to me is a potentially fatal flaw. So you want to talk about, well, what about their run defense? I don't think those other things, you know, a shortage of pass catchers, the inability to stop the run, hell, even the special teams play, and I'm talking about the kicking game more than anything. Okay, those things, I don't think that those things have the potential to do them in like the offensive line does. If they don't get that squared away, they're in trouble.
It's without question the offensive line. What were the numbers that Bernard was rattling off about Marshall Newhouse?
Oh, my God, 31 quarterback pressures?
I think he said 31 and a half.
Holy smokes.
I mean, that's just brutal. And so, like Maz said, for the next couple of weeks, you're still going to have to deal with it, or at least this game, because you got to wait until Isaiah Wynn is available. He can't play against Dallas. And that pass rush has been a little bit better for Philadelphia. It was obviously an issue a few years ago in that Super Bowl, but guys like Graham and Fletcher Cox, like, you know, I'm a little bit worried about that. And everyone should be, because especially at left tackle, it's been mostly a disaster all year.
I mean, it is the source of all their problems, because they can't run the ball. Well, now, if you can't run the ball, you can't throw play action. You can't protect. Well, if you can't protect, the receivers need less time to get open, not more. Or have to have less time. You know what I mean? So, like, and Brady's got guys who can't get open. They have trouble beating man coverage. So, like, the whole thing to me is spun off the offensive line. If they can stabilize that, get to the point where they're decent, pretty good, they're fine.
Okay. Can they win it all without a dominant defense? And you can parse, change dominant if you wanted. Do they need their defense to be elite to win it all?
Yes, particularly if the line is vulnerable. They're going to need to suffocate teams to win. There's going to be no margin for error on defense.
So, you know, I think defense has got to be on the list there. And not that, you know, this is a different argument than what's the biggest hole on the team. The biggest weakness on the team is the offensive line. There's no question about it. The defense is a strength. But now you got to think, and this is sort of reverse of what they've been in the past. Brady was the most important guy on the team. He was the best guy on the team, but he was the most important because he had to overcome the mistakes of his defense. And if he wasn't elite, they had no chance. So now I'm sort of flipping that on the defense. So you're holding to this really high standard, this impossible standard. But if the offense is what it is, the defense has to be better than it was certainly last week, and some of those, you know, holes that, you know, some of the leaks that they've sprung here in the last couple.
Yeah.
So
sure.
That's why I think, you know, you got to put them on the list. And that is, that's, they're still the strength of your team, but if they're not, just whatever, call the top five defense, can you win it all?
So to your point, the Baltimore game is a great example. I blame the defense in that game more than the offense, because to me, the defense giving up 30 points and they give up 37 as a team cannot happen if you're going to win. If that happens, you're done. It's over. So now I think that it was an aberration. I mean, I think what we saw in the first 8 weeks was a little excessive. I don't think they're quite a historic defense. I think they're good. I don't know if they're great, but the competition was so effing bad that they looked, you know, they looked suffocating in the first 8 weeks. And I don't think they are that kind of team. But if they're even a, call it a B-plus defense, it's not good enough for them this year. They got to be an A-minus or an A.
This is what I'm talking about. So, you know, they're sort of on my list. In that second half.
And you know what? But the next few weeks should give us a good read on that. Because, again, you're going to see teams that have offensive talent at the very least.
Yeah.
Philly's got some weapons.
Well, especially Dallas teams that can run.
Yeah, Dallas has some weapons, right, and they can run
more. All of them. This whole stretch, Philly's a test. Deshaun Watson's a test. Dallas Cowboys are a test. And obviously Kansas City's a test. So all those test that defense, for sure.
And Houston, just to this point, Houston's fourth in the league in yards per rush. Dallas is sixth. Cleveland was second. They ran on you. Baltimore's first. They ran on you. So, these are the teams you're going to see here now.
And let me give you just another one that I'll put on my list somewhere down it a little bit, third, fourth, whatever. And it's sort of what we were just talking about. And that is Brady trusting and incorporating the entire offense. And I just don't know how far you're going to go if, your offense is Edelman, Edelman, Sanu, Sanu, Edelman, White for one, Edelman, 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 Sanu, Sanu, White for one, Edelman, 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 Sanu, Sanu. You know what I mean? There's a shelf life to that. And that's not where the Patriots are at their best, or just all that whole story. So will he lower himself to look at N'Keal Harry, or lower himself to let Jacoby Myers into the offense, or even Philip Dorsett or something? Or one of these tight ends, or your offense has to be a little more diverse, especially if they're going to be a spread team, which is sort of what you're sensing, that last year's big adjustment was to go heavy in the run stuff, and now it's sort of be just the opposite. It's going to be to spread and Brady and the ball in his hands and whatnot. You need more than the two guys, so come on.
Don't you think, aside from the opponent, because I know you said yesterday you think Philadelphia is their toughest remaining game, right? Philly on the road.
Yep.
And Bedard basically echoed that sentiment, 15 minutes ago. But take that part out of it. Don't you think this is a huge week for them? Because you're coming out of the bye. In theory, Harry should be part of the passing attack. You've had now 2 weeks to try to refine the offense a little bit, or at least settle on some stuff that can work. Right? It's an important week. And the defense is coming off its worst game of the year. We need to see some sort of progress this week.
And I'm sorry, I know you just mentioned this. Wynn can't come back this week, Kenny.
Correct. It's Dallas. Right, it's Dallas. So I know you could say, well, there's a huge variable there, and there is. But even so, you know that going into the bye.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you've got 2 weeks to plan there. And 2 weeks to say, okay, how do we get Harry integrated? How do we convince Brady that he can throw to Jacoby Myers while he also has Edelman and Sanu on the field? And, how does the defense adjust to the Baltimore game? I think they're going to show us a lot this week, I think. If they go out and have a stinker, ooh, that's a bad sign. That's a bad sign. And again, Philly's coming off a bye, too. So maybe they're saying the same thing in Philadelphia that we are. Because that team's 5-4. That division's up for grabs. But in terms of who the Patriots are and their ability to sort of make the adjustments, this is a big week for that. It's a big, big week for that. So, and again, let's see. Put Harry in the lineup and let's see if he can get a couple of catches out of him. I don't need 8 catches. Can we get 2 or 3?
That's all I'm saying. It's spread it out a little bit. And it doesn't have to be Harry. It doesn't have to be Myers. It doesn't have to be Dorsett. But can it be one of them? So, I'm not picky about that. It doesn't need to be a young guy. It'd be nice to see the young guys, but it doesn't matter.
And Mike, to your point, it's all related, right? And when I say that, I mean, if they can get a little bit more efficient offensively and score a little bit more in the red zone, well, now the defense can be B+. If they can get to the point where the offense is a little bit better than average, because it feels like an average offense.
Have you given up on them running the ball at the end of the year like they did last year?
No.
Murray?
No, not yet. No, because when Wynn gets back, the line should be better. And they're going to be playing some bum teams like they did at the end of last year, so maybe they can get it together in a matter of a few weeks.
And I also think that he's athletic. And so, he's a strong kid.
You mean Isaiah Wynn?
Yeah, he's built more like a guard, really. You put him with Tooney on that side, you might be able to run the ball to the left. I don't think you're going to have the running game that you did a year ago. But between Tooney and Wynn, you throw a tight end over there. Maybe you got enough there to pick up a short yard when you need it. And I'll take that at this stage. Get the 3rd and 2 for me. Get the 3rd and 1. If you can do that, or get the goal line yards, you'll be able to punch it in the red zone. That will make a huge difference. Because they're 50% in the red zone with Tom Brady, a quarterback. That is just not good enough. They're in the middle of the pack or below middle in red zone and 3rd down. The Patriots with Tom Brady. Since when?
Okay. I purposely didn't want to mention it, but I just feel I should, so we can get it out of the way. Gronkowski's not happening, right?
No. Please stop it with this. It's not happening. No. I don't know. But because of the story over the weekend with Ian Rappaport, with Robert Kraft spoke to Rob Gronkowski back in March. Way to bury the lead, Rappaport. Like, at that time, maybe he was wavering a little bit. It was a month removed from the Super Bowl. Since then, he's dropped that weight. He's talked multiple times about saying he's not coming back. Even Brady's now gone on record saying, like, yeah, you know, he's not going to be coming back. He ain't coming back. He's not coming back.
What I love in that whole story is that, you know, Robert asked him to come back. Robert is sort of leading the charge. It's like, oh, you have the whistle, you know, around your neck again with the stopwatch. Like, they would have stopped to ask what the coach is, you know,
right.
Does the coach want him back? Like, it's another one that's, whoo, you know, over, I guess, Bill's pay grade, the tight. So now he's not in charge of the quarterback or the tight end. Like, that sort of dynamic. Like, you would just sort of ignored that thing. Yeah, Robert asked him back. Well, neat. What? How does the coach feel? Just curious about that.
How do you think he feels?
I think that he feels the same way about Brady Garoppolo, which is I want this to happen, meaning I think Bill probably would hate the precedent of a player allowing him to, you know, the player determines when he comes back. I'm going to tell you when I'm going to report, and I'm going to tell you when I'm going to play, and I'm going to determine my role in the offense and how I do it. And that probably makes Bill's skin crawl. Like, no, it's not your football team, Gronkowski. It's my football team. I decide whether you play, how you play, when you play, etc. So on that sort of philosophical thing alone, I think Bill would be out on Rob Gronkowski. But like the Brady Garoppolo thing, oh, you're going to force me to have the greatest tight end ever? Fine, I'll deal with it. You're going to force me to keep the greatest quarterback in the history of the sport? I guess I can live with that. So he'd live. He wouldn't blow it up. He wouldn't storm out of here like this. He'd accept it like he would accept everything else. But I think the biggest thing for him would be you don't let the player call the shot on when he reports and when he plays. That's your call.
Yeah, I don't think Bill wants him. And again, I'm not telling you that Bill will quit if the owner and Brady, you know,
exactly,
can spy, because he won't. I mean, he'll coach it out and fine. He might not use Gronk the way they want him to use him, but whatever. Like, what's he going to do, quit in the middle of the year? There's no way he'll do that. Okay, so fine, he'll suck it up and go with it. But let's not forget, he tried to trade the guy 2 years ago.
Sure did.
Okay, so there's no doubt in my mind that Bill wants nothing to do with it. Like, in Bill's mind, he says, no, you made your decision, that's it, we're done, we move on. You know, we're not going to play this half in, half out, then we're not going to do this stupidity.
I think the whole thing's unrealistic. I just don't know if you can sit out that much at that position, just waltz in and like, okay, here we go, throw me the ball, like we're playing flag football or something. I just don't think it works that way. And no interest in being dinked around by Rob Gronkowski and him just keeping us on the hook for all of his other crap. No use, zero use for that. So that's the only time we've even mentioned the thing. But since we're setting up the second half, I thought I would mention it there. All right, so all that's on the table. Your thoughts on the Patriots heading into the second half. More reaction to last night. To your calls right after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Tom, you guys are 8-1. You now head down to Philadelphia. This is the meat of your schedule. I'm sure you'll figure out exactly where you are after you play the Eagles, Dallas, then you're at Texas and hope against the Chiefs. So this stretch of games, along with Baltimore, will give you that opportunity. Where do you place yourselves at 8-1? Do you think you're one of the best teams in the NFL, or do you think that you're a long way from being at the top?
Well, what I think is, at this point, it doesn't matter, because 8-1 means nothing. You know, 2001, we won the Super Bowl. We were 5-5. In 2015, we were 10-0, and we lost four of our last six. You don't have to look far. You look at the NHL, how was the St. Louis Blues, you know, halfway into the season? How was the Houston Astros 2 months into the season? Not very good. The point is any team at this point, it's really is their season is going to be determined by what happens the next 7 weeks of football.
He's right. You do get the sense. Season starts now. Every good team has had their sort of throw-up game.
Absolutely. Yeah, hiccup.
You know, like New Orleans losing at home to Atlanta?
Bad. That's and being held to 9 points.
Sacked six times, Breeze was.
Did I see correctly that it's the first time in Drew Brees' career in New Orleans that they have not had an offensive touchdown?
Is that right?
I think so.
So either way, like, you could go, just go down the line. Every good team has had their hiccup. And so now, you know, now it gets real. And so, you know, he's obviously right about there. You know, right about that. Doesn't matter where you are midway through the year. But did he have to go? Did he have to go Blues on me?
You don't have to look far. You look at the NHL. How was the St. Louis Blues, you know, halfway into the season?
Could you use another example? Like, I know.
Think of that. That'd be like the Redskins winning the Super Bowl. No, the Bengals.
That's out of character, man. That's almost like blowing Boston as a whole.
It's not. But, I mean, Presti knows, frankly.
You don't have to look far. You look at the NHL.
All right,
I get it. St. Louis Blues.
I got it.
Halfway into the season.
I got it. All right, to your calls. By the way, Maz also said he'd rather have Russell Wilson right now than Tom Brady. Just that's gotten some people's panties in a bunch.
Oh, boo hoo.
Jerry in Murrayville. I heard you earlier, Jerry. Go ahead. You can call again. Go.
Oh, no. I want Colin to. I know exactly what Maz is saying as far as the quarterbacks go. And I would also take, because there's no brouhaha or anything going on in Seattle as far as a quarterback working with everybody on the offense. We have all this brouhaha with going on with Brady. And I do want to say this before I go.
Well, let me stop there. We do have a brouhaha. We do. It's like Russell Wilson is not surrounded by much there. He's not. And he throws to him. And he works with him. And even the DK Metcalf, which I thought was, I was glad I watched him last night. I wasn't that impressed. You know, big, raw guy that I don't see much of a, you know, it's not like he's a tactician out there. So I can see what Michael Lombardi was saying in his pre-draft analysis, and I can see why the Patriots went N'Keal Harry over DK Metcalf. It's not about the personnel assessment and that thing, because I think DK Metcalf might be every bit as raw, if not more raw, than N'Keal Harry. But he's out there and he's playing and Russell Wilson's throwing to him and he's a part of the offense. And so it's Russell Wilson working with a young, inexperienced, imperfect receiver. And I think they're better off for it. And I don't know if that happens here as much as it used to. I don't think it does.
I don't think it's even debatable that it doesn't happen as much as it used to. Like, you know, and I'm not telling you it's a zero now, although it feels like this year with Brady or maybe the last couple, but this one in particular, like it's gotten worse. Really.
No, but and you make a good point. If this is the last year, he's saying to himself, well, why am I investing time in these kids? I'm gone. It's all about winning the next 8 weeks, and that's it. So that Jacoby Myers, but I think he's wrong about this, because I think Jacoby Myers could help him, and N'Keal Harry could help him, and some of these no-names tight ends, if he looked their way and threw their way, might be able to help him. But he's thinking, what's this investment for? I'm out.
So is he right to think that way, though?
No, he's not. That's what I'm saying. He's wrong to think that
right.
way.
Right, but I'm saying even if it is for the long term, because you've made the point a million times, like Bill Belichick saw what Bill Parcells did and said, I'm going to leave the Patriots in good shape when I leave. Shouldn't Brady be doing the same thing? Shouldn't Brady be looking at the receiving corps going, well, I may not benefit from it, but...
It's harder for a player.
Well, I know it is. I understand, but it's not like Bill has a stake in ownership.
I just think it would help him in the short term. I think as imperfect and raw as DK Metcalf is, and as marginal of a player that Jacob Hollister is, both those guys helped them win a football game last night. So forget the future. Brady can F the future, right, Murray? I'm talking
always.
About this year. This year. If you just invest a little bit in a fringe roster player and keep him on the hook and keep him on the line and keep him invested, maybe he's there for you when you need him. And I'm not giving up on that, by the way. I still think that all can happen. And when it will, you folks will celebrate it. You won't be so defensive about it like you are right now. You'll say, oh, my God, look at Brady going to Jacoby Myers in a big spot when they need it in a big game. That's good. You know, Brady going to Malcolm Mitchell in the Super Bowl against Atlanta was a good thing. We celebrated it. We should. That still can happen here. And I'm not, you know, I still think there's hope for that.
Oh, I don't rule that out happening either. I mean, I think that if Brady's willing, it can absolutely happen with Harry and Meyer.
Stephen Yarmuth, what did you think about Jimmy Garoppolo last night?
Well, my question is more for Maz, and it's just one of these things. So please don't blow me. I don't want to get blotted. This is an actual serious question. What were they supposed to do in 2017? Did you want them to trade Brady? Because to me, that sacrifices the sixth Super Bowl. And, like, I don't hate Garoppolo. I actually want to see him succeed in San Fran. But it's one of those things of their hands were kind of tied, and I just – what else were they supposed to do? Now, do I think the return on Garoppolo was bad? Absolutely. They should have got way more for that kid, probably sent to Cleveland. But, like, I just don't understand exactly – like, what did you want them to do? I'm just interested in what you wanted them to do in that situation.
So, look, Steve, at the time I said that they should have franchised him and carried him for that fifth year. They didn't, and as it turned out, even that wouldn't have mattered. So Brady has played well enough here now in the absence – you know, we're talking about two-plus years now since they traded him – that he's played well enough that you can't possibly look at it and say they should have traded Brady. I mean, so I was wrong on that one. Like, you know, from that standpoint, they got more out of Brady than anybody thought. So at the time, though, I thought they should have franchised him because my attitude was, so what?
Never going to happen.
Money. I know, and it's not my money. I know it was never going to happen. But to me, if you have the next guy and you think it's just for a year, I'd bite the bullet on the $20 million if I were running a franchise.
George in the car, your thoughts.
Hey, so last night I saw Murray tweet about this, and I agree. The play calling last night by the Seahawks was awful. There were multiple times where they're taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand, running the ball, and then passing on third down on a bad pass. And this isn't even going back to him, like just in general. The other night with the Cowboys, the play calling was awful on that last drive. They're running the ball, and then on fourth down they decide to throw the ball, and they lose the game.
So, Murray, I think I know the sequence you're talking about. And so this was this a sequence where it was third and two and it was one of those read option plays with Russell Wilson, the shotgun? He ended up handing it off and he gained nothing.
Yes.
And then they almost went for it on fourth.
Yes.
Where they kept their offense on and everyone, and, you know, the Tessitore and everyone's like, they're going for it on fourth. I like this call. And I was saying,
oh, I hated it.
You like this call? What are you talking about? It's a 46-yard field goal. Line up and kick the field goal. What are you, stupid? You're going to go for this on fourth and two? And I said to myself, oh, well, it's sort of obvious now. Russell Wilson gave the running back the ball on third and two. He's going to keep it on fourth and two. I can call it from here. Russell Wilson's going to keep it. He's keeping it. And then they called timeout and brought the field goal team on. So I think that's a sequence.
That's part of it. And there is, they just lean on the run way too much. And again, this is coming from someone who actually does like running backs. But what I tweeted too is, like, I occasionally tune into a Seahawks game that's on primetime these last two seasons. And I'm always, like the caller mentioned, like, why are they taking it out of Russell Wilson's hands? Like, he's your best offensive player. And then I realized, oh, you know who their stupid offensive coordinator is? Brian Schottenheimer, who shouldn't have a job, but does because of nepotism and all the same guys continue to get jobs in the NFL after they're rightfully fired. The same guy that was with the Jets during the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez era. He stinks.
How hard were you rooting for the Seahawks last night?
Oh.
Sounds like you were grinding it.
Oh, I was. Yeah, no, that was, I was a little too into that game.
And you didn't like it? You didn't like the game? It was just too much pressure?
No, it really wasn't even so much of that. It was over-officiated. It was a sloppy game. I hate listening to the Monday Night Crew like Bedard. I don't know how many people actually care about the announcers, but they bother me. I don't know. I just thought it was overrated. So many people are like, oh, that was one of the games of the year.
It was.
I didn't think so.
Oh, I thought it had
the
it
overtime
all.
Was entertaining, but the rest of it I thought was kind of a slog.
I mean, I didn't say well played, but I just saw it.
Oh, it was an entertaining game.
Last night's why we do what we do. All that blah potential and all the lead changes and the momentum and the back and forth and all the stuff on the line and, you know, all the big plays and then all the huge mistakes from everyone. Well, it was tremendous.
Yeah, and look, the game was incredibly imperfect. I mean, there were
it was sloppy, but
mistakes all over the place. But competitively, it was awesome. I mean, you had all kinds of crazy plays happen. There were a couple of great individual performances. Clowney was the best player on the field last night.
He annoys me. And I don't want to steal the line because I was texting with Gasper during this. He's like NFL Rajon Rondo. Like, he has so much potential, and he only really tries when the lights are on and he's playing in a primetime game. That dude was the balls at college. He has that kind of ability game in, game out. He takes time off. That's one of the things. It's one of the reasons they traded him with Houston.
Can you imagine Murray and Gasper texting each other during that game?
Oh, that must have been cute.
Oh, did you see Garoppolo mess that up? Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was, oh, yeah. It was all of that.
Oh, I wonder what Felger Maz is going to do about that one.
It started with...
Did you see Garoppolo put the ball on the ground?
He started it. Want to text Maz so bad right now.
Did he seriously?
Yeah. 10:32 p.m. Want to text Maz so bad right now. I respond, this effing fraud. Nice awareness. He looks like a scared little bitch in the pocket right now. He's shook, is what Chris wrote back.
No, he and Murray were sexting last night. Gasper and Murray, a little...
Seriously.
A little Garoppolo session.
I thought I was the only one having a little... time by myself there with my jersey and helmet on and nothing else. You two celebrating Jimmy. I'm sure that Gasper was equally as interested in what Jimmy was wearing at the post-game press conference.
And what blonde he was going to bother this week.
So we've got an update here from Murray. We continue with your football calls. A quick Celtics minute as well right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Mass.
I love it.
You were right, Mass.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
The Celtics have found ways during the 8-game win streak. A different way every night, a different hero every night. No Gordon Hayward. Jason Tatum, 1 of 18, and the Celtics still beat the best offensive team in the NBA by double digits. They win their 8th consecutive game and maintain the best record in the NBA. Just the way you thought this season was going to start. The final score, Boston 116, Dallas 106.
Just the way you thought the season was going to go, says Brandy sarcastically. No, actually, that's kind of how I thought the season would go. Sorry. Yesterday, Maz, when we did our Celtics schedule until the Hayward gets back, win-loss yesterday. Did you have last night? It was a win or a loss?
Loss.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
I did. It's happened to me a couple times this year already.
And Grandy, as he points out, Hayward out and Tatum a basket case.
1 for 18. We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, we can get to it now. But anyway, those two things happen and you win by double digits.
Okay, so first of
all, what does that tell you?
Well, I neglected to realize Dallas was playing for the third time in 4 nights.
Oh, here we go.
So I missed that little detail.
Do you want an asterisk on the win for the Celtics?
No. I mean, a win is a win is a win. I picked the Mavs. I thought the Mavs were going to beat them last night, and I missed a significant fact, which is that Porzingis looked like a guy who hadn't slept in 4 days, for crying out loud, because he blew in that game. Boy, did he suck. Porzingis, horrendous. So, I give the Celtics a lot of credit. Kemba, king of the fourth. A couple of big shots there last night. Isaiah, 2.0.
King of the fourth. I'm having a hard time figure if that's a dig or not.
Kemba time.
That feels like a sarcastic shot.
No, I'm just telling you, king of the fourth.
That's a shot.
He was good. He's Isaiah 2.0. I've told you that. It was a good performance by him in the fourth quarter. He made some big shots. I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know you are. You're being underhanded. Yes, you are. There. Yep, you are.
I just, again, to me, he's Isaiah 2.0.
Is that a good or bad thing?
Well, Isaiah had nights like that, too.
No, is that a good or a bad thing?
I mean, it's good in the regular season.
Uh-huh.
But in the postseason, it's only going to get you so far. That's all I'm telling you. So, he made some big ones last night. And Kemba can't help him that way. Tatum's really the guy.
Okay, go ahead. Talk about Tatum.
So I looked this up this morning. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I saw 1 for 18 and I went, wow. Like, talk about not having a conscience. You're just going to keep chucking them up there? 1 for 18? 1 for 18. Do you realize how historically bad that is?
Well, tell me.
In Celtics history, there has never been a guy to take, until now, to take 18 shots in a game and make one or less.
He's the first.
He's the first. Now, look, Frank Ramsey in 1960 went 0 for 15.
And they put his number up top. Did they?
Yeah.
Is his number up there?
I think Ramsey's number is up there.
People. Yeah. You Celtics people. Seriously.
So he is. He is a, it was a historically bad night. I mean, like, maybe the worst shooting night in the history of the Celtics organization.
They got it. Vinny's got it behind you there. He'll throw it up here in a second.
Okay, there you go.
Frank Ramsey. Look at that. All those numbers are retired except for Jason Terry.
Yeah. Now, look, Bird had a 1 for 15, right? And Sam Jones was
a rookie, obviously.
In
1980, he was a rookie year, right?
Yeah, that's right.
79-80.
79-80, very good. Yeah, Bird. That was Bird's rookie year. So, without Frank Ramsey...
It's a good list.
Okay, it is a good list. So Frank Ramsey, 0 for 15. Tatum, 1 for 18. And then Sam Jones, Larry Bird, Antoine Walker, Jason Terry. But that should tell you how bad a night that was. Would be if you were at the Garden last night, you saw something special.
Does that tell you anything? Is there
no.
any conclusion?
No. The one thing I would say is you might want to pass a little more.
The conclusion is that he can go 1-for-18. Gordon Hayward can be out, and you're still beating a pretty good team by 10 points at home.
True.
And that's just going to tell you, that's telling you what kind of year they're going to have. It's just another indication of what kind of year they're going to have.
It speaks to their depth, because typically that's the kind of night that should kill a team like this.
Well, especially when, you know, especially when Hayward is out. Right. I mean, that's a big one. So I will give them that. They have a lot of different guys that can score. That's a, you know, and Dallas plays no D. Dallas sucks defensively. Boy, did I underestimate that. In the third game in four nights, Porzingis was a no-show. Doncic can play for me any day. But 8-1, they're off to a good start. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're not.
They're a good team. Stu, you were off yesterday. Any thoughts on Hayward's injury? Any concerns there?
No, I will tell you that I think that Hayward will be back Christmas Day against Toronto, because that's the big shiny, everybody's watching the NBA on Christmas Day, and Penelope will push for that showcase.
Sure, she's not going to want him at home for Christmas?
So Maz yesterday had Gordon Hayward.
No, the lights are bright, Tony.
Maz had Gordon Hayward gone yesterday. He was a little stronger in his take than he has been in the past. I wonder if he was, you know, talking to somebody.
Gone, what do you mean
you're
gone?
You're making this up.
He's going to opt out.
This is in your head.
No, you said this. You said this yesterday.
I did say it. But
definitively, stronger than you had in the past.
But my opinion on it has not changed.
Who are you talking to, Mass?
No, but your delivery has.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Jimmy, do you think Hayward's going to opt out at the end of the year?
I tend to believe that Hayward's an interesting trade chip for the Celtics this year.
So you think they're going to trade him?
No shot. And yes. I'll tell you why. Because they're going to be in it. Like, they're going to be in it, and they're going to be
If Gordon Hayward gets you a big, don't you make that move?
If they're in it, if they're the number one seed in the East, and they looking like they have home court to the finals, I think they'll be reticent to change that mix, and Gordon Hayward's their best player.
Kind of like how they're number one in the East, and they traded Kendrick Perkins for Jeff Green.
He was their fourth or fifth guy. You know, if that. He was a starter, but he was a role player.
They won't trade him.
If Gordon Hayward's your best player, they're not going to trade him.
I'm serious. I think he's going to opt out. I just, you know. Now, the injury, I suppose that could complicate things. If he gets hurt again, he'll stay. Because he's not going to go on the market coming off an injury and get no money when he can make 30-something million or whatever it is here. But if he plays like he's been playing, he's out. He's gone. There's no reason he wouldn't opt out. The free agent market sucks. He'll be the best guy out there for crying out loud.
Maz, are you talking to Penelope because she still wants to go to Miami?
I wouldn't rule that out.
See? There you go. Yeah. He's hearing something. There's your Celtics Minute for you. Added in with our football conversation. We'll reset our Garoppolo thoughts off of last night's game with your calls. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Garoppolo pressured by Reed. Fumbled the ball. Picked up by Clowney. He'll take it back for a touchdown. Touchdown, Seattle. Jaron Reed, defensive tackle, came in. Not only sacked Garoppolo, but he knocked the ball from his hand. It rolled backwards. Kadeveon Clowney scooped it up and scored. Garoppolo almost hit as he threw. Throws. Oh. It is dropped. Intercepted back the other way. Quandre Diggs down the sideline 20. And he's hit and dropped on the 15-yard line. Garoppolo almost got hit as he threw. It went right through the hands of Kendrick Bourne. Quandre Diggs, the former Lion, who they just traded for October the 23rd in this first game as a Seahawk, with the interception and a 40-yard return back. Garoppolo back, holds it, got hit, fumbled the ball. Seattle recovers on the 49ers 24-yard line. Puna Ford recovered it. Did Clowney strip it again?
Yeah, he did. 36-inch arms, stick one of them out, and pops the ball out from Jim Garoppolo.
There's Garoppolo's three turnover night as the Seahawks went on the last play of overtime, a fascinating Monday Night Football game last night. Murray hated it, even though he gets to blow everybody about Garoppolo.
And I hate it. It was just overrated. Like people saying it's one of the great games of the year. I disagree. I thought it was sloppy on both sides for both the Niners and the Seahawks, and it was over officiated, and the refs were making me crazy.
Okay. Do you want to blow everybody on Jimmy Garoppolo?
Oh, I'm just right about Jimmy Garoppolo, and last night is proof of that. And that's why this team is ultimately going to lose probably their first playoff game because of him. The defense has been hiding his poor play. He was single-handed. Those three turnovers led to 21 points. And so he led his team to 16 points, one touchdown, three field goals. His turnovers result in 21 points given away, five-point differential. Again, I did the math. I can do it again. They lost because of Garoppolo. In the eight games prior to last night, the 49ers defense had prevented his mistakes from hurting the team over and over and over and over and over again.
Do you think the interception was his fault?
Yeah, too high.
Oh, come on, Murray. Do you really believe that?
Yep.
So you're not really worth talking to.
Oh, well. Ooh.
I mean, honestly, it went right through the receiver's hands.
A little high.
Okay. That's just silly. It's really not worth talking. I mean, it's not. I mean, enjoy it, I guess, but I mean, you can't really have an honest adult conversation.
It was also on the wide receiver, but the ball was a little high. It was.
It was a 20-yard out right on his face. It was a perfectly thrown ball that the guy went through his hands for 7 points going the other way. So it's not worth having a. If not going to be fair, like, I mean, I don't know what really the point is there. I don't
look,
think.
I mean, I'm biased, but that catch has got to be made. In the NFL, that catch has got to be made. I'd say the same thing.
I mean, we're all biased. I mean, what happened on the play? Like, what? I mean, again, it's like talking to a child. That wasn't Garoppolo's fault. He had like four balls that should have been intercepted. Ironically, the one that was shouldn't have been. But he had like four or five others that easily, heck, his second ball of the game was intercepted and called back on a penalty that was questionable. And then on the last drive of the game, he had two that were right in the Seahawks' hands. So those absolutely could have been, should have been intercepted. The one that was actually one of his better balls. And I think also was a problem for him last night. His receivers blow.
Oh, they were horrendous.
He wasn't good, but his receivers sucked too.
Well, what it really shows you is that offense without George Kittle, no matter who the quarterback is, I'll be fair here. Without Kittle, they're kind of screwed. Like, he is their best offensive weapon. Sanders goes down. Yeah, I'm with you. Like, those wide receivers aren't that great. And more than the picks and the other ones that he should have had, especially in that last drive in regulation, not being able to hold on to the ball, the jittery overall nature, like, because he just kept thinking, like, oh, my God, here comes Jadeveon Clowney. Where's Clowney? Oh, my God, where's Clowney? Where's Clowney? That was the worst look for him all night.
No question that was worse.
Yeah, he was skittish.
He was a panicky little panicky pick chicken in the pocket last night. No question about it.
So I was just looking it up. Do you realize he's got 14 fumbles in his career?
That's a lot.
Seven this year. He's only started 19 games. Now, I'll have you know, and you can look it up, Murray, a certain number 12 fumbled a lot early in his career.
Andrew Luck.
And you can go check it out. Okay, so he gets strip sacked a lot. So it is something you can learn in terms of protecting the ball there. To me, this is my biggest gripe with Garoppolo. The picks are one thing, and he throws too many balls into traffic. He does it all the time. It's just stupid. I mean, he's a gambler, and you can't gamble at that position because your team, your whole team is riding on your shoulders, for crying out loud. But the fumbles? Good God. A, get rid of it before when they get there, or cover it up when they do.
Protect the ball. No question about that.
Holy smokes, it's infuriating.
So I thought it was the whole, you know, Garoppolo package last night, good and bad, even despite all those bad mistakes, despite all those balls that should have been picked off, despite the fumbles, I still think he made, you know, a handful of really big throws and big moments to put him in a position to win. They easily could have won that game, should have won that game, if the guy makes the kick. And I think it was a mistake-prone game on both sides. You know, Russell Wilson, who's the league MVP, had a strip for a touchdown himself and threw a hellacious...
His interception was brutal.
Interception at the end of overtime. It was really that kind of game back and forth, which made it so, you know, so many dramatic, you know, momentum changes and all that. But I thought you got the whole Garoppolo package, good and bad, last night. But at the end, he was a failing grade. To me, I don't think he's the biggest issue on the team. I think his receiving corps is the biggest issue on the team. I also still think that if, you know, because we can't help but personalize it here, if he was here... Don't you think they'd beat some of those turnovers out of him?
Yes.
You know, Bill would get on him so badly about it. He'd threaten him with the job or something where I just don't think he would put as many balls up for grabs as he does if he were here. Bill wouldn't accept it.
I mean, he is. He's too careless. And this is why the coaching does matter. Now, look, I mean, the history with guys with Shanahan is that they do improve. And so Matt Ryan was very protective of the ball when he was under Shanahan. In fact, I think Cousins got a lot better at it too in Washington. But the fumble thing with, you know, with Garoppolo is real. And way too many, and he's just got to eliminate the stupid throws. That one to KJ Wright in the fourth quarter was as bad a throw as you will ever see. Why are you chuckling?
No, because I'm just recalling, and you clipped it. We played it before. It's right when Booger McFarland says his best two receivers are out. They can't run the ball. This is all on Jimmy Garoppolo, and this is what the NFL's been waiting to see. And then he drops back and throws it right into KJ Wright's hands, right into him.
I mean, and it's not a play where, like, you know, Wright dropped back into coverage or came over front, like came out of nowhere. He was right in front of the tight end the whole throw. The whole time he was right there. And Garoppolo threw it anyway. Like, what are you looking at?
Okay, but then still, he converts third and five on that series. He, you know, sort of settles down and drops the ball off and gets him in position to kick the game time field goal. So that's what I'm saying was sort of the whole Garoppolo package for good and bad. But ultimately, he was one of the reasons they lost. I'm not going to dispute that. But I just on Shanahan. Shanahan, I thought, and I think as I've watched the Niners a lot, his scheme is nice. He's got a really pretty offensive scheme. You can see what Belichick was talking about when he said, "I'm, you know, Garoppolo's going into good hands and whatnot." But the game situation, when the bullets are flying in overtime, I thought he lost his touch or lost the spot in the game twice. The first time was when the Niners, it was after Wilson threw his interception, and the linebacker there, 57, returns it past midfield, and then Garoppolo picked up a third and six on a nice throw on the backside to the running back right at the sticks to pick up a third and six, and that running back, again, that third running back, gained 8 yards on the next play. So they're second and two at, call it, whatever, the 30-something yard line. And Shanahan ran it twice right up into the middle. And I thought the second one, they got a bad spot. The second one, he might have had that first, and they blew the spot. And even after the replay, they didn't adjust the spot. But either way, I thought Shanahan played for the field goal right there, which from 50, 48, 47 yards, that was a little too conservative. He should have done a little bit more to try and get a couple more yards for that young kicker.
He made the same mistake Matt Nagy made a few weeks ago or a couple of weeks ago.
Like right, exactly.
Yeah, if you can get yourself in position for a 32-yarder, then do it. Like, why are you going to kick from 47 when you can get another 15?
So I understand Clowney was in Garoppolo's face and he was mistake-prone. So I'm not saying you run this big, risky, you know, 15-yard in-cut in front of a safety. But is there another little dump-off to the back or a screen or something you can do there to be a little more aggressive than just diving it into the middle and settling for a 47-yard field goal that your young kicker then, you know, he then drilled into the tunnel, almost took out a stadium worker. Okay, so I thought Shanahan made a mistake there. And then the last possession of the game that the Niners had, the Seahawks were out of timeouts. The Niners got the ball, their own 20-yard line with a 150 left. If they just, I'm not saying take a knee, but if they took a knee, the game's over, they have a tie, and they're two games ahead in the division with, what is it, 7 to go. Like a commanding lead. They're still undefeated, but more importantly, they're two games ahead of the Seahawks for the division with 7 to go. Commanding position in the lead. Commanding. And they threw it three straight times, low percentage each time. The third one was a bomb down the right sideline where, oh, by the way, if you want to get on Garoppolo for that, though, he had Samuel. Samuel had a couple steps.
Ball was underthrown. Yeah.
And Garoppolo underthrew it and to the sideline when if you'd let him out over the field a little bit and let him, that might have been six, which, you know, was another missed throw by Garoppolo. But low percentage either way. Between that and the punt they take, as you said, 14 seconds off the clock or something like this. And it's just all you had to do was run just one play that the ball didn't hit the ground where you could run the play clock. And at worst, you have a tie. At worst, you're two games ahead in the division. And Shanahan threw three straight, you know, low percentage balls and left just enough time for Seattle. That was a big miscalculation by Shanahan.
I mean, when they got the ball, there was 150 left. They ran three plays and it was 134. 16 seconds, then they punted and it was 125. Four plays, 25 seconds, nine of them were on a punt. Like, they gave Russell Wilson two cracks at it.
Well, that's the same architect behind 28-3, so you're really that surprised?
This is what I mean. Like, yeah. When the bullets are flying, I wonder about Kyle Shanahan.
So I'm glad you brought that part up, because I wonder if that was going through his head. at the end of the fourth quarter, right? You get the ball on the 30-yard line.
Yeah.
Second and two.
Right, it was the same spot, and he threw against the Patriots. That's right.
He threw, and they get sacked.
Yeah.
And there was a holding penalty,
yeah.
And then they had to punt.
Yeah.
So, and we said, just run the ball and kick the field goal. Now, the difference is they were on the 22, I think, if I remember right. Because I want to say it was like second and two at the 22-yard line or something like that. And they, you know.
This was the, I just want to get you the exact.
The 31 of the 32, I think.
This was the 30-yard line.
Okay, 30.
Okay, so it was the 30. So it was a 47-yard field goal.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's but just too deep.
I know. I wonder if it went through his head. Like, you know, we had this in the Super Bowl, and I threw, so I don't want to get him sacked, and I don't want a holding penalty.
Okay, but
so let's run it.
So that one's debatable, but the one at the end of the game, man, if you take the tie, you're two games ahead in the division with 7 degrees.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.